Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I want to be alone.
Where have you been? I suppose I can cancel the Vienna contract.
I just want to be alone.
Yes, more and more people are going Greta Garbo. Today, one in every seven Americans lives alone, and even more go solo in big cities like New York. As of the 2010 census here, single households now outnumber married ones. This trend toward living alone has been called the most significant demographic shift since the baby boom. NYU sociologist Eric Kleinenberg explores the renaissance of the singleton in his new book, Going Solo, The Extraordinary Rise and Surprising Appeal of Living Alone. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
Who are the singletons of today, and how do they differ from the singletons of yesterday?
Well, they differ in one big way, which is that there are so many more of them today than there were even 50 or 60 years ago. In fact, until the 1950s and 60s, you could not find a single society in the history of our species that had large numbers of people living alone. Today, it's common everywhere. It's more female than it once was. In the 1950s, most people who lived alone were men, and they tended to live in the large, kind of sprawling Western states. They were migrant workers on the path to something else. Today, it's really an urban phenomenon, and women outnumber men.
Have changing gender roles and educational achievement for men and women impacted that change?
Yeah, you know, there's a bunch of drivers behind this story, and one of the big ones is the rising status of women. With women's entry into the paid labor force, they suddenly had the capacity to take care of themselves, to provide for themselves in a way they never could before. Couple that with changing sexual norms and the rise of divorce, and you have a kind of possibility for going solo that we never had.
A study commissioned by Match.com found that among those singles 21 and older, 27% said they didn't want to get hitched, while roughly another 40% were uncertain whether they did. Now, 21 and older, that means all adults.
Uh-huh.
But among all adults living alone, about a quarter said they did not want to get married. 40% said they were uncertain about that. A little more than a third said they knew for sure that they did want to get married. Are those numbers very different and important?
They are. I mean, interestingly, in 1957, a group of psychologists from the University of Michigan did a survey in which they tried to tap into what were Americans' attitudes about being married and being unmarried. And 80% of the respondents to the survey said that people who were adult and didn't want to be married were either sick, immoral, or neurotic. Our attitudes towards this have changed so much today that you couldn't even ask that question with a straight face in an interview. Everyone would just crack up. We've changed the way we think about marriage, and we've changed the way we think about our own lives.
So, listeners, call in if you live alone. 212-433-WNYC. Call in especially if you live alone by choice. 212-433-WNYC. Tell us why you live alone. Tell us if you have parents or grandparents who judge you living alone, or maybe we're just so far removed from that time that those attitudes are just not even to be found in the older generations today. 212-433-WNYC. Call up with the pros and cons of living alone for NYU sociologist Eric Kleinenberg, whose new book is called Going Solo, The Extraordinary Rise and Surprising Appeal of Living Alone. What is the appeal, and why is it surprising?
Well, look, we live today in an age of hyper-connection, maybe even over-connection. So many of us spend so much time at work engaging with others in our social media, in the Facebook, the texting. It's so much stimulation in life that for many people, living alone is a way to turn off. You get off the grid a little bit and have some time for solitude, to decompress, to think a little bit about how we're living and what we want to do. And that means that kind of paradoxically, for many people, living alone is a way to reconnect with themselves, but also ultimately with other people in more meaningful relationships.
Another sociologist, Robert Putnam, was famous for his book, Bowling Alone,
yeah,
about how people are becoming more disconnected from community. That book is like 10 years old now. But you also write about community life and ties. And I wonder if the rise in singletons with their drive to engage with friends and activities because they ultimately go home to be alone is a solution to the decline in community that Putnam talks about. Could living alone actually reverse bowling alone?
You know, there were so many surprises for me when I was working on this book. And when I started, I really did think that people who lived alone would be less social, would be more likely to be withdrawn. There's a story we tell in the United States about the ways in which, you know, families are the heart of civic life and the key to neighborhood vitality. But when you look really closely at the evidence, it turns out a very different story emerges. People who live alone are, on average, more likely than people who are married to spend time with friends, to socialize with neighbors, to go out into the public sphere and spend money in cafes and restaurants. They're even more likely to volunteer in civic organizations. This was not the story I expected to find. And it's interesting that you mentioned bowling alone, because I think that for the last decade or so, since that very important book was written, we've talked about our society as if we've lost something, as if communities are falling apart. We're not connected to each other in the way that we used to be. And this is a way we have of defining ourselves. My view is actually very different. You know, we've changed, but we've changed in interesting ways. And what's so fascinating to me is to think about this rise of living alone as a kind of social experiment. Look at all the ways we're adapting to new conditions.
Putnam's bottom line, I think, is the lack of trust and social trust that we have in others and the political ramifications of that, as well as the personal and family and community ramifications of that.
But he's also interested in our declining ties to each other, and our declining participation in the public realm. The trust thing is interesting, though, because, you know, when you discover that people who go solo are themselves more likely to go out and participate in civic groups, you know, you're not seeing people who are narcissists who say, I can't trust anyone else. You're seeing people who want to live differently, and contemporary conditions allow us to do so.
Jacob in Cliffside Park, you're on WNYC. Hello, Jacob.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You live alone?
Yes, I do.
And?
And my comment is, I think it's primarily due in part to, you know, people 21 to maybe like 30 years of age. Work has just become so difficult for a lot of us. You know, with the economy, we have to work more hours. And I think it's just really difficult on our relationship. I just got out of a relationship myself, and, you know, I almost broke up with my significant other the night before Thanksgiving because I was working until 1 o'clock in the morning to try to finish up some work before I went on vacation. And, you know, I just really think it's a big factor is just how much that single people have to work nowadays. It's just such a strain on trying to have a solid relationship.
Thank you very much. Do you think that's a cause?
I interviewed hundreds of people for this book with a team of researchers from NYU, and this was one of the main themes that emerged, what Jacob described. The fastest growing segment of people living alone in the last several decades has been young adults under the age of 35. In 1950, only about 1% of young adults lived on their own. Today, it's more than 10%, more than 5 million people. And one of the amazing things we're hearing is that in your 20s and 30s, which used to be the time for settling down, having a family, this is now precisely when people are investing in themselves and their own careers. It's precisely not the time to get married for aspiring professionals. And I think a lot of that is about the insecurity of our working lives today.
But getting married, even living with your lover, is not the only way to live with someone. We talk on this show about, you know, families doubling up because of the economic crisis rather than become homeless. We talk about young adults moving back in with their parents because they can't find work. So is living alone only for those who are, you know, sufficiently affluent?
It is. It's expensive to live alone. And that's what's so interesting about Jacob's point. You know, Jacob does have other options available to him, like having roommates. Probably doesn't want to move back in with his parents if he can avoid it. But this idea that as a young adult you're going to go out and get your own place is really a historically new phenomenon. You simply did not see this before the 1950s and 60s in most parts of the world.
But get your own place can also mean with friends, with roommates.
Absolutely. But now there's an idea that even that kind of doesn't quite work out so well after a little while, right? The days of the 1960s collective housing experiments are over. And there are great stories in the book about all the frustrations people have with roommates. You know, the roommate who's sitting on the couch whenever you get home, the roommate who doesn't do the dishes, the roommate who complains that your shower is too long, and the roommate who's hitting on your girlfriend when you bring her back. I mean, they're just hysterical things that get on your nerves and make you say, enough. So many people move to New York City. after school, say, after college, and they have a great time with roommates until they don't. And then they really want their own place.
Eric Kleinenberg, author of Going Solo, The Extraordinary Rise and Surprising Appeal of Living Alone, and Evelyn in Long Valley. You're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You live alone?
I'm a personal trainer by trade, so I'm around people all day long. And it's nice to be able to come home and not have to engage anyone in, how was your day, sweetheart? Did you make dinner yet? Or what are we having for dinner? Whatever. I can just unplug and recharge. And when I choose to be with people, then it's my choice to be with them.
So do you think as long as you're a personal trainer, you'll never be in a live-together relationship?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I've kind of gotten set in my ways living by myself. I like to know where my things are and that I don't necessarily have to clean up after somebody else or worry about, oh, my gosh, I didn't do this thing or that thing for my significant other or roommate.
Right.
You know, you guys were just talking about the horrors of having horrible roommates. Uh-huh.
Evelyn, thank you very much. Again, that push and pull between contact with people and being alone.
And let's be clear about something. You don't have to make a commitment to living alone, right? I mean, the point for me, and we have callers, you know, coming in only if they're living alone now, but the truth is, in the world we live in, people will cycle in and out of different situations. They live alone for a time, they live with someone, maybe get married for a time, break up, live alone again. We don't have the same kind of structures that hold on to us at all phases of our lives. And so people today are willing to experiment with different kinds of things. And a lot of people I interviewed said they had learned a lot living on their own for a time and enjoyed doing that. But at some point, they also felt like they were ready for the kind of experience of intimacy that you only really get when you're living with a partner. So they want to try that. But nothing it has to last forever today.
When we continue in a minute, I want to ask you about policy implications of the rise of singletons. And we'll take more calls from some of the many of you calling in to talk about living alone, the pros and the cons, with Eric Kleinenberg, author of the new book, Going Solo. Stay with us. WNYC with NYU sociologist Eric Kleinenberg, author of Going Solo, The Extraordinary Rise and Surprising Appeal of Living Alone, and Catherine in Park Slope. You're on WNYC. Hello, Catherine.
Brian, I just want to say I can't live without you.
Aw.
I lived by myself until I was like 40, and then I met my husband online, and I thought I really hit the jackpot. I was an only child, adopted. I really wanted a big family. So I was really psyched to be involved in this whole community. And it was a nightmare. It was an absolute nightmare for me. I just couldn't handle it. And I loved what your guest, Eric, just said about, you know, things change and, you know, because now we're divorced. And I'm living alone by myself. And I feel lonelier than ever, to be honest with you. But sometimes, you know, another caller said, you know, it's great to just come home and know what, you know, if the dishes are dirty, they're yours that you left there and you can't blame it on somebody else. And
I'm curious, did you live alone for a long time before you got married at 40?
Yes, I did. I was alone all the time. And, you know, I mean, I had boyfriends and stuff like that, but I lived alone and I was very used to being alone.
So it made it harder for you when you actually did get married and live with
That's
a husband.
Right. Because then there was somebody, and I guess I anticipated, like, the entertainer.
Meaning?
Or you know, I expected that, you know, we would both come home from work and we would have these fascinating conversations and things would be phenomenal. And, you know, he would come home and be, you know, like, I can't talk to you right now. I'm just depressed.
Next time, don't marry somebody who's depressed. But Catherine, thank you very much.
Yeah.
But there is, I mean, this is not just about Catherine, right? Because her story actually, I think, speaks for a lot of people.
No, I was going to say, you know, one of the issues about feeling lonely at this point might be Park Slope. You know, Park Slope's the family place, right? You want to be around other single people. Huh. You got to go to Brooklyn Heights or downtown Brooklyn or And it's interesting, in the piece I did for the Times over the weekend, they had this incredible interactive map where you can see which neighborhoods in the city have lots of people who live alone. Uh-huh. And in fact, this is one of the ways in which cities become great resources for singletons today. There are now certain places where you know you're going to find other people who are in your situation, right? So you can live alone but also be together with other people who are looking for the same kinds of things. And the one thing I think that's really interesting about what Catherine said also is that she is feeling more lonely now.
Yes.
We need to make a really clear distinction between things that we generally conflate in these conversations: loneliness and being alone and living alone and being isolated. These are four very different kinds of things. They can be connected in some situations, but not always. So, for instance, I did a lot of interviews with people who were separated or divorced. They'd live with someone for a long time. And many said they had never been as lonely as they were living in the wrong relationship. That, in fact, getting a place of their own was a kind of liberation and a
sure,
form of uplift.
But look at Catherine's story. Even as relieved as it sounded like she felt to not be married anymore, there's an ambivalence that she expressed about living alone. She's happy to be on her own again and be in control of her space, but at the same time, she's lonely. And I'm sure that ambivalence about living alone is very common.
Absolutely. And let me be clear. My book is not a book of advocacy. I'm not trying to say, you know, leave your family. You're going to be better off solo. I'm a married guy with two young children, and I treasure the days and nights I have with my family. What I want to do is understand this incredible social change and to really take a serious look at how it's affected us in our personal lives, our family lives, how it's changed cities. And there's no easy answers to any of these questions. There's no cure for loneliness that can be prescribed to every person. So people move in out and out of different feelings kind of regardless of whether they're in a marriage or on their own.
Liz in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Liz, are you in Park Slope too?
Hi there. Great to be on the show and listen to this great conversation. I'm actually in Boreham Hill, Brooklyn.
Okay. So I was going to say, if you're in Park Slope, you could call Catherine up. You can go out for tea. Little companionship.
Right.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, hey, I recently living alone for the first time in my life, 27 years old, had a boyfriend, lived with him for 3 years, and before that, roommates and college. And I feel so happy to be on my own right now. And I was telling somebody I'm more social than I've ever been. And so I can't wait to read this book because I feel I'm wondering why that is.
What does that mean, more social?
I say yes to everything. You know, friends, going out for cocktails, going out to, you know, new independent movies, and saying yes to everything. Where I, in a relationship or when I had roommates, I found myself staying in more.
It's interesting. Brian, you asked me before why people go solo, and I said, you know, they can decompress and get that solitude. But the other thing, of course, is that living alone gives you a kind of personal freedom to do what you want to do, when you want to do it, on your own terms, to not have to worry about the surveillance of others, to not have to worry about judgment. It gives you the capacity to experiment. And, you know, your late 20s and 30s, this is an amazing time to do that kind of thing.
Liz, thank you for your call. Enjoy your time living alone. And again, my guest is Eric Kleinenberg, NYU sociologist, author of Going Solo, The Extraordinary Rise and Surprising Appeal of Living Alone. And as dramatic as the change has been here in the United States, aren't there some parts of Europe that have far more singletons?
You know, this was another one of these big surprises for me. When I started the project, I thought, you know, this is an American phenomenon. This is about our culture of individualism and self-reliance. You know, we inherited this from Emerson and the Lone Ranger, Thoreau, all these characters who are part of our legacy. But it turns out we are laggards internationally when it comes to living alone. In most European nations, the rates of living alone are far higher than they are in the United States.
How do you explain it?
Well, people live alone today wherever and whenever they can afford to do it, whenever they have the security to do it. So if you live in a place that has a combination of a flourishing market economy, some market affluence, but also a strong welfare state that promises you some social security, it's much easier to make this choice to live alone. And I want to say, I keep emphasizing this choice. I know that there are many people who in the abstract would rather be married or have a partner, but the difference is they're not going to compromise for the wrong partner. They're not going to settle. And they're choosing to live alone rather than have roommates or move back in with families, which is what we used to do decades ago.
Ernie in Centerport, you're on WNYC. Hello, Ernie.
Hello, hello. I'm very interested in this topic. I was married very happily for 38 years, and my wife passed away. And I find that surrounded by all the things that you built, you know, the house that we built together, and the garden that she really nurtured, I'm a pretty happy guy. I don't know that I want to change it at all. And I have lots of friends, and I'm very sociable.
Are you surprised? Did you expect that being a widower would be a lonelier experience?
You know, I am surprised. You know, as I walked through the house, and I have pictures of her all over the place, she was a beautiful woman to begin with, and I just looked at those pictures as I walked by, and I smiled. And I do have dinner parties, and I do have people over at the house, and I'm amazed at how content I can be after having what I thought was a very successful marriage.
It's a beautiful story, Ernie. Thank you. And do you touch on people like Ernie in your book?
We interviewed more than 100 older people who are living alone around New York City. And again, just did not expect to hear so many stories like Ernie's of people who had, you know, really missed their spouse and clearly wished that they were still with them, but who were surprised by their own capacity to remake their lives living alone. They definitely did not want to move in with their children. They definitely did not want to move in with other family or friends, and God forbid, a nursing home. And this is a city that's full of people living like this. You know, there are more than 1 million people living alone in New York City right now.
Is this where the policy issues come in?
There are some policy issues because not everyone ages alone as successfully as Ernie is. So there are conditions in which people can get isolated or, you know, dangerously vulnerable. I should say my entry into this project is that I wrote a book about a heat wave in Chicago in 1995 where hundreds of people died, and many of them died alone. And I was concerned about social isolation.
If you're, it's the last time you were on the show,
exactly,
I think.
Exactly. So if
during
you're
old, that heat wave.
If you're old and frail, so it's nice to be able to go on the radio when there's not a heat wave. That's one reason to write this book. So if you're old and frail and vulnerable, you really need some kind of social support and services. And let me say that one of the terrible consequences of the recession that we're in right now is that the city government and state government have cut funds for home services to people who are aging alone. And that can be incredibly dangerous, especially for people who are homebound. And this happens time and again when there are tough economic moments. We cut services to the most vulnerable elderly people in our community. And so in the book, I talk a lot about redesigning solo living, not just policies, but also remaking places so that we can be better connected.
Well, folks, if you don't want to be alone right now, there's a parade going on outside with like 500,000 people downtown. So go there. NYU sociologist Eric Kleinenberg, author of Going Solo, The Extraordinary Rise and Surprising Appeal of Living Alone. Thank you so much.
Thank you.